Welcome to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, the show where brilliant professionals share how to sharpen the universal skills required to flourish at work. Enjoy more career fun, wins, meaning, and money with your host, Pete Makaitis.
Hello, and thanks so much for joining us here for episode 181 with Scott Barlow. Scott has such a deep well of experience working with so many people, talking about their strengths and their jobs and their roles and their fits, and he brings it all to bear here in this conversation. So you're going to learn, one, the six critical things people need from their work, two, why strengths are different than skills and why that matters, and three, how identifying your anti-strengths can skyrocket your self-awareness. So if you'd like to check out the show notes or the transcript or the links to items that we reference here, you can find that over at awesomeatyourjob.com/ep181. And while you're at awesomeatyourjob.com, I encourage you to check out some of our cool resources. One I'll point you to is the Gold Nugget email summary. So if you're listening to this show, when you're driving, you're running, and you think, oh, that's great, I'd love to take notes, but alas, you're not in a position to put a pen to paper. Well, we take those notes for you, and we send them right to your inbox each morning. There's a new guest, and that's the Golden Nugget email list. We find the most actionable insights and tidbits and try to condense it, summarize a bit. And you can find that on the website. Or if you say, Pete, I won't remember to go to that website, you can also sign up right from your smartphone by simply texting the word NUG. That's N-U-G, short for nugget. If you text NUG to 444-999, you're all set. You text NUG to 3 4s, 3 9s, and you're on the list. Now, here's Scott's story. Scott Anthony Barlow is the founder of Happen to Your Career, a company that helps you stop doing work that doesn't fit, figuring out what does, and then teaching you to make it happen. He has been helping people develop their careers and businesses for over 10 years as a human resources leader, business development expert, and career coach. With over 2,000 interviews worth of experience from his HR career, Scott interviews others telling their story of finding work they love on the Happen to Your Career podcast. Scott and his wife, Alyssa, have 3 children and live in Moses Lake, Washington. Huge thank you to Scott for taking the time to share his expertise, and a huge thank you to our sponsor. It is Text Expander by Smile. With Text Expander, I can type just a quick abbreviation of text, and that will expand to a whole lot more text in any software program. So it saves me from having to type repetitive items, and it also multiplies productivity for a team that's using it in a collaborative environment by using a shared snippet base. You can visit textexpander.com/awesome to start your free trial. Here's Scott. Scott, thanks so much for joining us here on the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
You know, I got a real kick out of reading about you and your interest in parkour, which makes me think of The Office. Tell me your story with parkour.
First of all, I'm wondering, like, is that a thing? Why does everybody, including myself, when you hear parkour, need to be like, parkour?
I think that's the way they said it in The Office episode.
That might be it. Because like all of America, when I tell people these days, they're like, I say, I do parkour. And they're like, parkour. I think it's an obligation. I don't quite understand it, but it's kind of awesome, as it turns out.
Well, it feels good. Like if you said, I enjoy sailing, no one goes, sailing.
Yeah, sailing. Yeah, tacos. Or yeah, exactly. So parkour and me, it's kind of been a manifestation. Like I used to be, when I was growing up, I used to be a like skateboarder and inline skater, like people that you see on half pipes and stuff. So yeah, it was a ton of fun. But then I got older and stopped doing all that and really stopped working out for a period of time. And then as I started, ended up like starting to run and lost 50 pounds and everything like that. And then after I could move around again and like chase my kids around and everything, it's like, oh, well, I would love to do something else that feels awesome, like, you know, rolling up and down a half pipe. And parkour was one of those things that I found that was kind of easy and fun. And naturally, I was sort of good at it already from having some of the motions. And I've just had a ton of fun with it over the last couple of years. And it never feels like a workout, even though it is incredibly hard.
Now, where do you go about parkouring and what sorts of things are you jumping off of?
Anything I can find that that isn't, you know, like 3 stories tall or anything. we're in Moses Lake, Washington. My wife and I live in Moses Lake, Washington. We've got three little kids here. And it just turns out there happens to be a gym that is owned by somebody over in Seattle, which is a much more, I don't know, larger place, much more sensible place to run something that does parkour. Anyhow, they have a smaller gym over here and they have a training facility inside that gym. So it just happened to be there at the same time as I was having some interest. And it's like, oh my goodness, I have to do this.
All right. That's so good. So you happened to be there. And speaking of things happening, you've got a fun brand. Happened to your career. Can you tell us the story behind the name and what it's all about?
Yeah, happened to your career. You know, really for me, it came from things happening to me for a period of time. When I was going to college at Eastern Washington University, state school in Washington State, I was going through and I was going into the business program. First of all, I flipped around. I must have changed majors like 8, 9 times and whatever else. And it was terrible. I didn't have a clue what it was that I wanted to do or be or anything else. But then eventually I found a business program and I started looking at, well, I have to have an internship in the business program. So what am I going to do about that? Because I don't want just any internship. I want to, if I'm going to go and do something, like I don't want to go get coffee and donuts for somebody or whatever else. And I guess be careful what you wish for, because I ended up coming home with a small business and ran a painting business. And it was actually a franchise, purchased a franchise of a painting company. And they ended up teaching me a whole bunch about how to not just accept your situation. So that initial thought of, hey, I just don't want to do what everybody else is doing and it's probably controllable. I don't have to just go accept any internship. Later on, when I went into my first quote unquote professional job and had a terrible time and found myself driving to work in, you know, multi-hour commute and having stomach pains and all the things that go along with it. I think I gained like, between 50 and 60 pounds, something along those lines. And it was just, it was a terrible, terrible fit. They eventually fired me after I told my boss that maybe this isn't such a good fit. And apparently he thought the same thing. So 3 weeks after that, he canned me, and it was the best possible thing that ever happened to me because it forced me to really take matters into my own hands and go and get something that I was actually excited about and learn the process of how to go through and do that. So I ended up taking all of the skill sets that I'd learned running a business and marketing a small business and then applying that into job search. And then I have had this continual fascination after I got fired and hated that job and really swore never to be in the same situation again. I didn't want to waste my time doing something that I didn't love doing.
Okay, there you go. So you're happening to it. And so now, happened to your career, you help folks who are thinking about career transitions and what they really want to be doing and that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. When we came around and wanted to start a company again, my wife and I, then we realized that we were already helping people that were in that type of position. I was already going to coffee with people and meeting with them and helping them make these really big job changes from what they were doing right now and weren't that excited about and weren't loving into other careers that really actually fit their strengths and what they wanted out of their lives. And it's like, oh my goodness, why are we not doing this as a business? And that's where we started, and that's who we help.
That's fantastic. Well, so now I love that we're able to just skim the cream from the top in terms of all the work you've done with so many people. You know, I'd love it if you could begin sharing, you know, some of the, I guess, most frequently occurring and strongest insights that you see that prevents folks from loving their work.
You know, I think that really it comes down to a few things. First of all, there's a number of things that people don't realize that they have to have in their work in order to have some level of happiness.
Huge.
And really, we've kind of broken it down into six different areas. And some of those are a little bit obvious. Like if you don't receive pay that you feel is fair, if you don't feel like you're compensated fairly, then that acts as a barrier between you and any measure of happiness. And it doesn't necessarily matter so much the number. It matters more on, do you feel it's fair? And, you know, do you agree with that, et cetera, et cetera. However, there's other things that people don't realize. Like, for example, how much say in how the work gets done that you get. like how much decision-making power do you get in how the work actually gets done? That is actually, believe it or not, linked to tons and tons of different studies on negative health effects and even cancer in a variety of different ways. It's just absolutely absurd. And yet, we still do that. We still don't give people that latitude in most organizations today, right? Just you look around and what happens is much, much closer to micromanagement versus, on the other side of that, giving people the ultimate freedom to make decisions about how their work is getting accomplished.
All right. So those would be decisions like at what time I do it, at what sequence I do it with my other priorities, where I do it, who I collaborate with, what tools or approaches I use to get her done.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All those are incredibly important. And if you really think about it, is there anybody that you know of that is excited for micromanagement, which is, again, the other end of the spectrum? I haven't met anybody yet.
Right. No, I haven't. Certainly. I think some people will appreciate the certainty and stability of this and clarity associated of this is what is expected of me. And so I will go forth and do that. But at the same time, if they're up in your business, it's just never fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So the other pieces of that, for example, a couple of other pieces of that, that for what everybody needs, you do need that clarity. You need the clarity in what's expected of you. You need to be able to understand how it is that you're doing and have also that flexibility or decision-making power and how the work gets done. Ultimately, when you look at those pieces, that's what can sprout into what most people would call engaging work and even has the potential to be engaging work. And that happens to be one of those categories, those pieces that make up engaging work.
Okay. Now you mentioned six things. And so I'm counting along at home. So we got the money, we got the clarity, we got the autonomy. Am I counting them right? What else have we got?
So here, let's break them down into the first four categories that are really things that we all need. And it's been proven again and again and again through many different studies, or at least that's how we came to the conclusion of how we're grouping these. So thing number one is engaging work, or work that has the potential to be engaging is probably a more accurate way to look at it. And that is those things that we just mentioned. That is your ability to decide how the work gets done. That is your chance to have work that is giving you good clarity and good feedback on what is needed and expectations, et cetera, et cetera. And then the next category happens to be moving into work that doesn't interfere with your basic needs.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it this way. Like if you've got a really very long commute and you're going 2 hours every single day, for nearly everybody, that's going to be bad, especially if it's, you know, in a car in stuck traffic, feels like you're not making any progress, et cetera, et cetera. So that's not going to be good for you at all. So you've got a number of different types of basic needs that everybody must have. And there's lots of different things that fall into that category. Fair pay is one of those things that falls into that category. And if you take a job as is, what's absurd here is only 13% of the population actually negotiates when they're coming into a role. But if you take a job as is, you're statistically more likely to be disgruntled with it over a long period of time too.
Right.
So there's that second category of, hey, is it fulfilling your basic needs? Not like food, water, and shelter, but other basic needs that are more difficult to satisfy that we often justify when we're taking a role too.
All right.
So then the other two areas really fall into, do you have a supportive boss and coworkers?
Mm-hmm.
And you can start to imagine how much of a big deal that is, especially when you look at the other category of engaging work, because unless you have a supportive boss and coworkers, you're probably not going to have that ability to choose how the work gets done, right?
Right.
So supportive boss and coworkers. And yet nobody's screening for that, or very, very few people are actually screening for that as well.
Like preach.
Most of us go in and we get our, we take our one or two meetings, whatever the interview is with a great company. It might be 3 hours that you're spending with somebody or 4 hours that you're spending with somebody. And then you're making a decision where you're going to spend years of your life at. And instead you can go in and you can actually talk to other people that they're not putting in front of you would be one way to be able to go about that. But third category is, do you have a supportive boss and coworkers? Mm-hmm. So your last category is, are you helping people and do you see directly how you're helping people? Because everybody thinks that they need to help people, right?
Right.
Right. Sure. And as it turns out, that's actually a basic human need. And it's not necessarily helping people like, am I a doctor? Am I a teacher? Am I supporting a social cause or something along those lines? But what's more important is, do you see the direct connection? So those are the things that everybody needs.
Okay. Oh, keep going. Keep going.
Well, the other two are a little bit more difficult. Actually, a lot of it more difficult. And that's, are you doing work that utilizes your strengths, particularly what we call signature strengths? And then are you doing work that fits your values and essentially what you place value on the most?
All right. All right. And so can you give an example of a fit for values and a misfit for values?
Yeah, absolutely. So here's a great example. We were working with a guy named Eric. And Eric is a really talented, very caring engineer. He was working for a company that was in the oil and gas industry. As it turns out, part of what makes Eric so caring is the fact that he is just incredibly empathetic. And Eric is the type of guy who gives actually about 30% of everything that he brings in to several different charities. Awesome. That he is really, yeah, really, really cool, right? He cares way more about people than the average person. He cares way more about people than, I don't know, probably me. And because of that, you know, he was very, very interested in supporting the environment at the same time. So he works for this oil and gas company. Really where he wanted to be and really where he was looking at was like the solar industry.
Gotcha.
And everything that he was doing and everything that he was supporting, even though he felt pretty good about some of the other areas of the job, it was going against everything in him. So let's throw out the cliched term, square peg, round hole, right? Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, it wasn't a particularly great environment at the same time for what he wanted. He was looking much more for a very family-driven environment because he's this really particularly empathetic and caring individual, right?
Yeah.
So total misfit.
Oh, that's very clear. Thank you. All right. So you lined it up. I love it. I know how a good categorization takes a long time to synthesize and come to. So I imagine you've been through many formulations of that. So, and it makes sense. It seems to add up for sure. So that's kind of like the recipe or essential ingredients to loving work. So I guess maybe the listeners are mentally scoring, you know, their current role on some of those dimensions. And so I guess other than doing a, you know, 0 to 10 evaluation on each of these criteria, have you observed for people that they get a little bit of an key indicators like early warning system, canary in the coal mine, kind of articulations or gut vibes people have that say, maybe it's time for a change? Like, what are those indicators you see?
You know, you mentioned gut vibes, and I think that that is the biggest type of indicator right there, where you're continually having lots and lots of stress and you don't even necessarily know and can't attribute to what the stress is caused by. Oh. One of the really interesting things that we find is that when people are working in their strengths, like we mentioned strengths as one of the things that people need to be able to do. You need to be able to work in areas that essentially utilize your potential and the things that you're great at. And I'm not just talking about skills. I'm talking about what we call signature strengths, which is the unique combination of your predispositions, the way that you're wired, your experiences, your skills, essentially all the things that make you, you, right? Mm-hmm. And when you're working in areas that, and spending your time in ways that leverage those pieces of you, you find that you have a much different tolerance level for stress.
Oh, yeah.
Because essentially what, yeah, I mean, absolutely, totally makes sense, right? Gallup did this one study where they have like 7.8 million pieces of data. And the end result of the study is that, hey, when you work in your strengths, you're less stressed. And people are like, yeah, I didn't really need 7.8 million pieces of data to figure that one out, right? But it's very, very true. The part that people don't really realize is part of the reason that that is caused, because you look a little bit under the surface and start to realize that many of those people that are less stressed are actually in really incredibly demanding jobs too. Jobs that are stretching them, jobs yeah. that have high levels of authority and responsibility. So you start to wonder, what on earth is going on here? Like, how do you mesh these on the outside, what should be really very stressful jobs, with people that aren't experiencing stress? And what you start to realize is that when you're working in your strengths, it's expanding your capability to handle different types and expanding your tolerance level to handle different types of growth and stress. It's almost like if I were to assign you a bucket. Like if you're not working in your strengths, you get a teeny tiny bucket. And when that thing fills up with stress, it overflows. And it overflows into anxiety and eventually burnout, right? And if you're working in your strengths, particularly your signature strengths, then you get a big bucket, a big old honking bucket. And it fills up with the same amount of stress and you don't even notice it. It's not a big deal at all. So it not only expands your capability to be able to handle stress and tolerate different types of stress, but it also expands the rate at which you can grow as a person too, which is the really cool component out of it.
Oh, that is cool. And I think that is such a great descriptor of that situation, because you know, I've had days where I had 11 one-hour coaching sessions in a day. And that's happened a few times. And I wasn't like, ah, you know, I'm going nuts. I'm so stressed. You know, but in a way, it was kind of an exhilarating thrill. It was funny. I remember on one of those days, someone tried to cancel. And I was like, heck no. We're going for the record today.
We are totally doing this.
Can we backfill this slot somehow? And so, whereas if I had a day, if I was doing maybe even 4 hours of preparing things for my accountant and taxes, it feels stressful.
Hold on, I fell asleep. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, and it does. And here's the thing, though. Some people actually love that.
Right.
And I mean, it can't just be the same type of monotonous work. Like, nobody really absolutely loves the same type of monotonous work and everything. But there are people that love different types of problems. Like, based on what we happen to be great at, we all enjoy solving different types of problems. And what is interesting to us changes on a per person. Like, I used to work in HR. Like, one of the things that I did was, I mean, HR, that's like the place where policies go to die and I don't know, people will get fired. And like, that's what people think of hiring, firing, HR, right?
Right.
But one of the things that I did in HR that was really pretty much a lot of fun for me was I actually got to create different types of not just policies, but compensation and ensure that people were getting paid, not just fairly, but in ways that they were really very excited about too, and link up compensation to what they thought was going to be good for them. And that is something that would bore somebody else silly. Mm-hmm. Like, they might be asleep on that one.
Yeah, that's so good. Okay, cool. So we talk about strengths. And so we've talked Strengths Finder here before.
Sure.
You're a user of the tool. So can you maybe share, in addition to using the Strengths Finder assessment, you know, what are some go-to methodologies for zeroing in on, would you say, signature strengths? That's the key phrase you use?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So the interesting thing is, first of all, strengths are not skills. Most people, okay, when I say strengths, they automatically go to skills. It's like, well, I'm really good at Excel. Like, Excel is not a strength. That is, trust me, that's not a strength. However, the things that might make you great, if you dig 2, 3, 4 layers underneath the surface, the things that might make you predisposed to learn Excel particularly well or to respond to Excel really well, where somebody else might have a hard time with it, those are what we're looking for that are your strengths. So it's those things that are essentially underneath the surface. And the way that you find those is by looking for patterns. And we've got a whole team of coaches. And actually, our coaches, one of the things that 100% of them are all amazing at, they all have unique strengths. But one of the things that we needed in coaches, because we often help people identify their strengths, is being able to see patterns and connect the dots where other people cannot do that. Because that's what you're looking for when you're digging 3, 4, 5 layers deep underneath the surface. So one thing that I love, just a really quick, easy exercise to get you started without having to go, I mean, StrengthsFinder is an awesome tool. We use that with our clients and students constantly. But let's say that you just already have done that and don't quite understand it. Or let's say that you don't want to pay the 20, 25 bucks, whatever it is for StrengthsFinder these days. And you can just pull out a piece of paper. To get you started, you can pull out a piece of paper. And we call this the past jobs exercise. And I like it because people always get something out of it. And it's really easy to do, and you can do it any place. So if you pull out a piece of paper, and what I want you to do is just in chronological order, list all the jobs that are on there, or all the jobs that you've had in the past, or projects, or volunteer work, whatever it might be. And then leave a little space in between each one. And then you can go through and be able to say, okay, what was it in this job that I liked the most? Now, some people are like, I hated that job. Like, I hated that job. Whatever it is, the one or two even little things that you liked the very most, that you enjoyed the most, or what are those things that you found that you were better than average at?
Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing that happens when people go through and do this for every single one is they start to observe patterns really quickly. Now, those patterns are not necessarily your strengths, but often those patterns give you clues as to where to begin digging for your strengths.
Mm, that is so good. And it's so funny. I'm thinking about, you know, my first career out of college was strategy consulting at Bain & Company. Uh-huh. And it's interesting about the things I really did love the most as you're speaking about this, that I really do see coming through now in my work was, well, one, I loved recruiting. And it's so people would often, you know, whine like, oh man, I got a lot of work to do on my client. And I also got to go visit this campus to recruit. I was like, can I do it for you? I don't think we could trade it per se, but I could try to fill in for you. And so I loved recruiting in terms of meeting a whole lot of people, telling them about something I thought was cool. I thought Bain was really cool. So I enjoyed telling them. And then I also loved interviewing them because we did a case interview format, which I still coach people on today in terms of, okay, we're solving a problem together and we're collaborating. And so that's so fun. And then I also remember there were times like, you know, I like Excel, but I think what I really do love the most are those sort of heart thumping for me. You know, there are these thrilling moments where it's almost like a movie or TV series, like we're about to get a huge reveal. So my wife and I are looking at buying a home here. And so there's one that seemed pretty good. It's like, you know what? We like this place. Okay. This can maybe work here. And so I said, well, I don't know if we'll really know until we look at the spreadsheet. And so then when I put all those those numbers in together that I like, I like laugh out loud in delight. It is like, aha, you know, there's the reveal. Like this place is absolutely, you know, going to make some great sense on the financial side of things. And it's the thrill of discovery that gets me going there. And that totally carries over here now into podcasting. You know, as you are revealing things that you've learned working with so many clients, you know, I'm thrilled to know it. I was like, what was it, Scott? What are the keys? What are the secrets? Lay it on me. Don't stop.
I love it. And I mean, once you start looking at it that way, then you can totally see how it works. Now, here's another interesting thing too, since you mentioned it and alluded to it. One of my favorite questions to ask people, and good way to think about it too, are what are those areas of your past roles, past jobs that you kept gravitating to, even though they weren't a part of your job? Like for you, in the case of recruiting.
Yeah.
Where, and maybe that's not the thing itself, but there's a reason that you keep gravitating towards it, even though you're really probably not supposed to be doing it necessarily in some cases. But what are those things? Like for you, it was recruiting, and it sounds like a few other areas too. And for me in the past, it's been, I found excuses to create different types of like media and content. Like I was an HR manager and I was doing video editing in my office. Like it wasn't, not something the average HR manager would be doing, right? And lo and behold, now I run a business where we put out lots of content into the world. And that turns out was an interest. But what are those other pieces where you keep finding yourself doing again and again? I remember this one guy that used to work with me at a past job. This has probably been like 8 or 10 years ago, something along those lines. But I was the HR guy. So everybody would come to me and they'd talk about people's good performance, bad performance, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, Scott, this guy sucks.
Oh, he sucks so bad. So they were so irritated with him because they kept finding him instead of doing what they thought he was supposed to be doing. He kept going and talking and having all these really great conversations with people. And it turns out this guy was just phenomenal at building relationships, but he was not in a job where he was asked to build relationships at all. Everybody loved this guy. And that's actually why he's still working there, because he was terrible at his job, but he was just phenomenal at building relationships. So everybody loved him. And they couldn't fire the poor guy because everybody loved him.
Now I'm reminded of, so in the good old days, we would have a New Year's Eve party for each year, and it got to be a bash at times with like 100 people during a couple of those years. I remember my roommate James would always spend so much time on the playlist, and we would get a little irritated, like, dude, there's so much stuff that needs to be cleaned and moved and prepared, and you're spending like yet another hour on the playlist. And I tell you, it was a darn good playlist. Got people moving, that's for sure. I mean, he did a heck of a job. And so but that's classic there in terms of, is anyone getting irritated at you?
Yes.
For what you're pursuing outside of what
which
you're
doing. Which is another sign. That's totally another sign. I remember this other guy, he was a client a couple of years ago, and he grew up and he was what most people refer to as OCD. So he'd walk into a room and like he wouldn't be able to do his work or wouldn't be able to get something else accomplished until he put the lamp in the right place. Right? Yeah. So I think after working with him, I don't think it was so much OCD as much as it was he had this insane need and insane desire to be able to put things into order. Now, he ended up working with a consulting company and ended up leading a decent sized team in a consulting company. And he would every single day, the team just loved him because they felt like he's so organized and had all his stuff together and whatever else. But what he would do is every single day, he would essentially create order out of all of this chaos. And he was doing that everywhere in his life. But up until the point in time where we worked with him, he didn't realize that that was actually a good thing because his family had joked with him and his friends had made fun of him and all kinds of other stuff his entire life. So he looked at it as like, this is this terrible thing about me and I can't stop it. But the things that you can't stop doing, it's two sides of the same coin. And we actually call those your anti-strengths. Mm. They're the things that can be perceived as potentially bad if you don't necessarily leverage them and don't necessarily understand them. And for him, he had to create order everywhere that he went.
That's so intriguing. That phrase, anti-strengths. I'm now thinking of matter and antimatter annihilating each other. It's Star Trek flashbacks from there's a lot of reminiscing happening today. Scott, thank you for
this. I know.
Because similarly, that trend for me in terms of I got to discover, I want to get the answer and discover the high impact thing that makes a difference. I remember I was with his home search again. I was just going to extreme lengths to assess the crime in different neighborhoods. Yes. And so I had someone pull all of these data from all of these charts. It's so to have thousands of data points to compare. It had some surprising insights that some neighborhoods are.
What was the most surprising?
Okay. Pretty Chicagoans here. One insight was that the Albany Park neighborhood, which has an okay reputation, but people historically, maybe it was a little bit not so great.
Yeah.
It has this reputation. It's like, oh, you know, be careful. It's a little bit dodgy over there.
No.
And then it's like, well, in fact, the Albany Park neighborhood has fewer crimes per person than the Lakeview or near north neighborhood area of Chicago. So it surprised everybody, including my real estate agent. It's, but I mean, heck, I think that's great news for homeowners there and that people are going to catch on that it's kind of underappreciated in some ways. And that was thrilling to have that aha moment, like, da, 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 and here we go. The insight that changes everything.
Very cool. I love that.
Well, sorry, we're making it all about me.
No. This is great.
Yeah, this is great. So, all right, so we talked about identifying patterns by taking a piece of paper, writing down the previous jobs and seeing where things you gravitated to, things that you did that irritated others because you weren't doing your main job, things that you loved. That's a great exercise. Anything else that would come to mind when it comes to zeroing in on those superpowers?
Well, here's just a couple other things that we do all the time with our clients, with our students. One of them is, actually, I'll tell you how to get this into spreadsheet mode so you can all get some discoveries too. So one of the things that we actually do is after we get all of these different pieces of data, we'll actually rank them and we'll even put them on a grid. We've got one exercise. This is not good for everybody, but this is kind of a fun one because it helps people get some insights into themselves. And we'll actually put it on just a four-part grid where one side of it, one axis is essentially, you know, how are you closer to really great at this? Or are you closer to average for this particular thing? Because we've had people ever at this point, you know, shake out all of the stuff and go for quantity over quality. So, well, let's say, for example, you did the past jobs exercise we just talked about. So you've got all of these cool little insights, right? And several of these patterns here for things that you are good at or things that you've enjoyed. Now that you've got all these little data points, you can plot them on this grid, which, as we said, one side of that is closer to average at the bottom. And at the top, it is
the best of the world.
You're really, really good at it. Yeah, the best in the world. And then the other side is how much do you enjoy it? Mm-hmm. Is it a little bit or is it a lot? So those things that are in the upper right corner, those things that you really enjoy, but also happen to be rather good at, those often give you some clues as to where you maybe should focus spending your time. Mm-hmm. Those less stress areas. That's where you get a bigger bucket. That's where you find the bigger bucket. It's hidden in the quadrant.
Oh, yeah.
We had one person who I absolutely loved this and now I use as an example all the time, where she took every single thing and she, as we were helping her evaluate different jobs and opportunities and different industries and sectors and professions and all these sorts of things later on. So she took these all, put them on a spreadsheet and essentially added weighting to every single one of the opportunities she was considering so she could see how they would shake out. And
respect.
Yeah, I know. It was pretty cool.
Oh, man. Well, Scott, I had so many more questions I wanted to ask, but I think maybe we'll just have to have a repeat episode because I'm watching the clock and I want to make sure we get to hear about some of your favorite things as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, here, I'll give people one more thing really quick that'll help pull this all together. Does that sound good?
Do it.
Okay. So, easy way to think about this, because everybody always wonders, like, how on earth do I figure out what it is that I love to do? Because it's not just your strengths. It's also what you value, right? Mm-hmm. But an easy way to think about this when you're going from, oh my goodness, what career should I choose? Like, I know that I don't want to do what I'm doing now. And I know that I don't want to be in this situation much longer. But a good way to think about that is like a puzzle. Like my son, I've got three little kids, but one of them in particular was putting together a puzzle. And he was having a terrible time. Like he's grabbing random pieces and he was trying to mash them together. And small wonder they weren't working, right? Mm-hmm. So I went and sat down next to him and showed him, hey, here's the easy way to put together a puzzle, the efficient way and effective way to put together a puzzle. And everybody knows this. Like you take all the corner pieces because there's not very many of them and you identify those and then you get all the edge pieces. And once you've got the edge pieces, you can sort of see that, you know, they go together with these colors and assemble those into a frame, right? Mm. And then after you've got that frame, the funny thing is, even if you've, like at my house, lost all of those pictures on the box and everything else, you can still sort of see what the picture is supposed to be. And people's careers work the same way. Most people are kind of doing it like Grayson, my son, where they're like taking pieces from the middle someplace and they're like, I hate this boss. And they're like, well, I really want flexibility and trying to mash them together. And then they're still wondering, well, where does that get me for my next job, my next role, and ultimately career happiness, right? So instead, if you think about it much like a puzzle and put it together in the same way, it's so much easier to be able to see what that picture in the middle actually looks like. So you start with your strengths. Those are those corner pieces. Once you figure out what are those areas that you are great at or have the potential to be great at, then you can begin layering in those next pieces, those framework around the side, the frame, those edge pieces, which are your values and what you value the most. Because you can't have everything that you value, but you absolutely can focus on what you value the most and run towards that very, very fast. So once you have all those things, it actually helps you build out that puzzle frame. And once you've got that puzzle frame, it's so much easier to see what actually goes in the middle and identify what you should be doing.
Excellent. Yes. Thank you. And I like your use of metaphor. I'm currently thinking of an episode of Salute Your Shorts where they did the puzzle upside down with no picture. I don't know how that fits in, but maybe
I think it fits.
So many of us are doing the puzzle upside down. It's just gray. Awesome. Well, thank you for that. You know, to extend that metaphor all the further when it comes to a puzzle with the pieces upside down where you can't see the image you're trying to create, I might go so far as to liken my computer work before I started using Text Expander by Smile to being similar to doing a puzzle upside down because of all the speed it enables me to have. So for instance, with Text Expander, I'll type a little abbreviation and then it will autocomplete, if you will. And that enables you to use it in all kinds of interesting ways and programs. So for example, on my calendar, I've got a Mac. It's the Apple calendar, iCal there. I'll push the command in for that new quick event. And then I can enter any one of my Text Expander abbreviations. So I like to have, for instance, :1 expands to the text tomorrow at 10 to 10:15. And so that is a time of day I know I'm very alert and sharp. And so it's like, ooh, this thing I saw, that's important. I want to make sure that's on my calendar so I can put that very quickly at the very top of that during the alert time. And boom, if I push :2, that'll expand to tomorrow from 10:15 to 10:30. Etc. So that way I'm very quickly scheduling the critical stuff onto my calendar faster than if I had to, you know, click up into there with all my different calendars and things auto syncing and color codes of one thing over another. It's just pretty handy and I dig it. So if you're using Text Expander for Teams, you could also have a whole group operate from a shared knowledge base with everyone using that optimal verbiage for repetitive responses. You can start your free trial today at textexpander.com/awesome. Text Expander is one of my favorite things. And now let's hear Scott's. And now can you share with us a favorite quote, something you find inspiring?
Yeah, I've got several favorite quotes, but one of them is, I like things to happen. And if they don't happen, I like to make them happen. It's a Winston Churchill quote.
Nice.
For semi-obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm. And how about a favorite study or experiment or bit of research?
I think my favorite research overall probably would be anything cited in Cialdini's book, Influence.
So good.
It was just every piece of research that he pulled together in that book was masterful because he had an amazing story along with it. So I would pick any one of those out of there and would easily be in my top.
That's good. Well, I'm going to count that for favorite book too. How about a favorite tool?
Favorite tool. I'm going to go with StrengthFinder just because it enables so many other things. It really does.
All right. And how about a favorite habit or personal practice?
I'm trying to build the habit of working out 4 hours a day, and it's really, really hard.
4 hours each day.
Yeah, not like the same thing all day, but like a little parkour and then stand-up paddleboarding. And this is something where as I was building this business, I was working out maybe like 20 minutes a week or something like that. So I'm significantly up from there. I'm about an hour and a half each, most days, someplace in there. Sometimes 2 hours.
All right. Wow. And how about a favorite nugget? Is there something that when you share, it seems to really connect, resonate, get people nodding their heads, clicking the email, retweeting?
When you are who you are more often, life is just a lot more fun.
All right. And if folks want to learn more, get in touch, where'd you point them?
You know, two places. You can certainly go to the podcast. We have a podcast called happentoyourcareer.com and certainly business of the same name. But the other place I would suggest to, if you want to figure out the puzzle, or if you want to begin identifying your strengths, or if you want a really good framework to get started on identifying what is great for you, then we actually have a free 8-day course, or we've made it free for your audience.
And oh, yeah.
You can, oh, yeah. So we have conveniently set that up at happentoyourcareer.com/awesome. I feel like I need to say that.
Good URL. It's a good URL.
Yeah, it is a good URL. I thought you meant like that. But then you can go over there. It's a really pretty amazing start to being able to get the answers to all of these things and really identify where you should be spending your time, because I find that's a much better lens to look at it through. And you get the answers on the other end, where we've got so many people that have emailed us and said, hey, do you have a PayPal link? Can I just pay you for this? It's been that good. We've had about 15,000 people through it at this point, and people just absolutely love it. So I would say that would probably be best way to begin to understand what it is that we do and just learn a ton about yourself at the exact same time.
Oh, that is perfect. Scott, thank you for bringing the thunder. So much good stuff. I wish you tons of luck with Happen to Your Career and all your adventures.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
That piece about the anti-strength was so handy for me in terms of what can you not stop doing. It really points you to something. And it's been quite instructive in terms of I thinking, boy, if I have an finished question, but I'm making progress on it. I just can't let it go. I need to really dig in and get to the bottom of it, which is why I tell my wife I would be such a terrible husband if I were a detective, because I think that's my impression of their whole job is that you're doing that. And I would not be able to deal effectively because my mind would always be kind of on that unresolved thing. So there's tenacity there, but there is a positive element to that in terms of that curiosity, that quest for knowledge and learning and discovery. So it all kind of makes sense that I got a podcast where I learn and discover those things and get to share them with you. So it's pretty cool. So sorry if it was a little bit too much Pete time. I tried to put the focus on the guest, but Scott, he was just bringing so much insight to bear. I could not share it. So I hope that you have similar experiences when you reflect upon these thought-provoking questions and check out that happentoyourcareer.com/awesomepiece. And again, you can find that link and all the other links at awesomeatyourjob.com/ep181. And I'd encourage you there when you're checking out some of the links, also check out the sponsor link, Text Expander by Smile. Give them a shot. Tell me what you think. If you have some cool stunts you're using it for, I want to hear about them. I've been enjoying hearing from listeners about the cool things that they're doing with different combinations of my favorite things. And it's been really fun. So let me know. And you can start your free trial by clicking their link in the show notes or visiting them directly at textexpander.com/awesome. And I also hope you'll push subscribe so you'll catch our next guest. We're talking to Sharon Steed. She is talking about empathetic communication, how to bring that understanding of others in all kinds of positive ways and what that means for your career and performance and just feeling good about your humanity. So I hope to catch you there and peace.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode. To get the most out of this conversation, visit awesomeatyourjob.com to find today's show notes, transcript, and infographic summary cheat sheet. For more entertaining professional skill sharpening, be sure to subscribe to catch the next episode of How to Be Awesome at Your Job.